Aaron Ward standing by. Before we said goodbye yesterday.
I don't feel like Tampa's got it in them. It's a hill to climb that's pretty tough right now, considering that you're looking back there and Vasilevskiy's awesome and Bobrovsky's just as good.
Florida beats Tampa Bay in a postseason series for the first time ever.
So I have this weird feeling, gut feeling, that Dallas is going to find something in Vegas. I think that they're starting to figure out how to play this, how to play against Vegas. And I think the repetition that they've had and understanding of exactly now Stone's in the lineup and who they've got going, I think they're going to make a series of this.
And this series is headed to Dallas, all tied at two.
Expert analysis from someone who's been there.
That's the question that has to be asked. Why the offense basically turning the volume down to 4? And why can't they find it back up to 9-10 like during the regular season?
It's Aaron Ward.
Didn't need one of your intros today, Andy Bennett. How you doing?
I don't know. After listening to that, I'm kind of a big deal.
Yes, pat yourself on the back some more. We got four elimination games tonight. We will get to them slowly. But I do want to start. I do want to start with, I don't know how many Montrealers. Do you have friends, John, that are paying attention to Dallas and Vegas or gave up? You know, you did better with your prognostication skill than Mystic Mike Johnson. I asked Mike after Dallas lost the first two games at home if they're done. He said yes. Now it's a best of three. But I think because of where they're located and the starting time of some of the games, I don't know how many people are watching that series, but it's a series. It's the only series we got, really.
It is must watch. It is absolutely awesome to watch. And it feels, Aaron, like not just that, not just the level of competition between the two teams, but the way that they're playing is like this is the epitome of what playoff hockey should be, in that it is rough, it is nasty, it's difficult to get inside. It's been awesome to watch.
So first, what, minute and a half? There's two enormous hits, McNabb and Ben, and kind of set be played. But it goes back again to me that the thing you always have to be aware of when you're a Stanley Cup champion is not only did the teams that play you get repetition and understand who you are, but there's a great body of work of who you are in the playoffs and how you play. So I think what has happened is for Dallas, they comprehend that Logan Thompson's not going to be a world beater. You know that there's the decor that's just immense or fully capable. And it's undergone a bit of a change. I mean, Anafin coming in, it's not the six trees back there anymore, but they're still fully capable. So I think Dallas has made an assessment of a couple of things. Dallas isn't the dumb Dallas team of years past. And what I mean by that is, if you think of how Dallas plays, it seems like every year they would shoot themselves in the foot over and over. And a lot of times it was, in fact, the captain would do it. Take a dumb penalty, untimely penalty. It's just something that was like, here goes Dallas again. I think it has been nailed into their brains, hey, listen, if we're going to play Vegas, who clearly understands how to get down this path, we've got to be disciplined, and we got to figure out where their vulnerabilities are, and we got to keep staying at it. And that's why I'm not surprised by the result yesterday, that it was, I mean, listen, they were down, and they just stayed with it. They didn't take unnecessary chances, no dumb penalties. They just played within themselves, and, I mean, listen, getting a timely contribution from a young guy, was he 20? Wyatt Johnson? Like, that's where storylines get made, right? We go back to the John Drews of the Washington Capitals. It sticks with me because I'm like, God, that guy came out of nowhere as a player in Dallas. Overcome the hurdle of getting or through the series. These are the great stories you want to see emerge because you're a couple of young guys are coming out of nowhere.
We're having some issues. You're cutting out a little bit. Andy is banging her head against the keyboard in front of her.
I'm so frustrated with these phones. Why does this keep happening? Maybe it's our phone.
I'm not on a headset.
Okay.
So as good as Logan Thompson has been, they have not put the pressure on him lately. That fluttering wrister ends up in the corner. Dadonov looks to be the playmaker. Fires one. Score! Dadonov throws one off the mask. looked like of Logan Thompson. A bank shot goal from an impossible angle. And Dallas has it tied.
I'm sure, you know, half the goals in playoffs are just throwing shit at the net and hitting something. And, like, even Dell's goal just hit off an arm and go in. So hopefully we learn, like, you know, they've scored a couple goals like that, you know, throwing it at the net, hit something, and next thing you know, it's a wide open net. So just throw pucks at the net. You're going to score dirty goals like that in the playoffs, and we had a couple good ones like that tonight.
Ridiculous goal allowed. That was Jake Oettinger speaking after the game. And what has to be scary for Vegas right now, Aaron, he seems to be getting better, Oettinger.
Yeah, composed, which sets a standard for your team. Your team feels like, in the same way, I'm trying to think of an example. We'll go to Florida. Bobrovsky presents an opportunity for that decor to be aggressive. And I think the same thing happens with Dallas. Is if Dallas can be successful, they've got to get more of a contribution from their back end. They got to be more aggressive, cut up, you know, cut the gaps down. Oettinger's allowing them to do that. So the quote about the opportunity, that's the thing about playing this Vegas team. You don't look for perfect opportunities. You look for a opportunity. And the shot off the head and the shot that hits the arm, that's the point. Like, these big guys clogging out the middle, they're big sticks. You're not maneuvering through the middle. You're not going to get something ideal. You got to manufacture your opportunities against big defensemen or decently mobile. And with the moment the puck goes to net, if there's a rebound, you're forcing those guys to turn. And that's an uncomfortable place because the moment you turn your back to the play, you don't know where your coverage is. And that's what you're getting from Dallas. And I think, again, go back to, I like what Dallas did because they seemed like they were still very patient in light of the fact they were still behind. And they got back in the game and still didn't panic or get outside of who they were intending to be in that game. And now, going back to Dallas, I think they have a better understanding of what Vegas did to them in the previous two games at home. And I think they've just got to get that mentality of, hey, listen, in Dallas or not, it's a road game. It's a road game from here on out all the way through the Stanley Cup playoffs.
They have to battle through stuff too. And when the players are working so hard on both teams, and it's, like I said, it's a war down there. I think we're letting the goalies off the hook. And they've got way more pads on than everybody else does.
Stupid remark about putting a dress on NHL goalies coming from John Cooper, of all people. What about that? I'm with him on this. I'm curious how you feel. I thought the second goal should have counted. I think they are taking the easy way out here with when it comes to goalie interference. What do you think?
Well, first, on the John Cooper analogy, it always can be better than that. I mean, that's uncalled for, but I would say of all the people to hold accountable, he's pretty damn good. So I think that was a more of a slip-up and not a character trait. On the goals, I'm just going to say it, where people might not. It's moronic and stupid how the National Hockey League decides what is and what isn't. Like, I went to a skate today with eight former NHL players. Top of conversations were getting dressed was, there's a good number of guys in that locker room that can never score a goal. Corey Perry should never be allowed to score a goal again because those disallowed goals are how he scores his goals. Like, where does the consistency... But there is... They can't even ask the question anymore. And here's the thing, like... John Cooper's too classy, although, again, we'll go back, horrible analogy. But, like, he's too classy to really want to call it the National Hockey League to the level he should because, A, he's not that guy, and, B, doesn't want to risk capital. I don't want to pay the National Hockey League money either. They got enough money as it is. They're swimming in it. So the truth is, he should say, they basically screwed my team. We scored a goal. Duclair's foot, whatever it is, he's there. He's like, it's an everyday play. But, oh, okay, now he's going to decide to call it different. So the team scores the goal, emotional boost. Now you have to reset your brain because you've gone from, hey, we're up, to, oh, God, we're back to the same place we were. So there's a little bit of emotional roller coaster. Not only does it happen once, it happens twice. At that point, they're cooked. Like, there's too much living on the edge emotionally when you play in these games to have to reset yourself that way. And I think that's what Cooper's saying. Like, figure your head from your ass, National Hockey League, and be consistent, especially when it matters. So now Tampa, a franchise that I think honestly, you know, had a good chance at being competitive for the Stanley Cup. Might not want to win it, but they could keep advancing more games. early summer. Why? Because the NHL can't figure out what is and what isn't.
Yeah, I mean, try reading the rule book. I mean, honestly, try reading the rule book and then read the rule book, keep it next to you, and every time there's a moment like this during the long season, regular season, or playoffs, tell me what you think after reading the rule book. It's silly.
Well, I've got a question. Yeah. On the second one, person who should be held accountable for that is Bobrovsky. He yard-sailed his gear because he completely lost sight of it,
yep.
And then decided he was going to sell-job it.
Absolutely.
That, honestly, that should be a friggin' penalty for the goalies. If that's the crap you're going to pull, if you're going to fake like you got hit, so that's one thing. Let's protect them. But the moment that you do that, you embellish. I think so. Tampa's got a penalty there, but Florida should got a penalty. Like it just. It's frustrating.
It's
the best time of the year.
Aaron, I mentioned earlier that I was watching Henrik Lundqvist in the studio at TNT, and he made a point. This is before the game last night. It's over the weekend. That's why he wasn't at your alumni game. He was talking about how Bobrovsky regularly will drop his goal stick because it's lighter for him. He feels it's easier for him to make a save with his blocker without holding the stick. So he already does that. So it looks like he's being interfered with and was forced to lose his stick because of goalie interference when that was the furthest thing that happened in that crease area last night. It's a shame.
Bobrovsky gave the Italian dad hands when your daughter's going out on her first date. Throw him in the air.
But the other thing, Aaron, is that like if it doesn't get fixed after this, like unless it's going to be something that decides the Stanley Cup, like this is a two-time Stanley Cup champion organization. Have been to what? Four of the last like six or seven Stanley Cup finals. It just cost them being able to stay in the postseason. If it doesn't change or there isn't more actual clarity given to officials or written in the rule book as to what goaltender interference is after this, this is gonna continue forever in perpetuity.
Patrick Deves and I were joking that this was the makeup call for Brett Hull in Buffalo, 23 years later. I think it's 2001 that happened. Like, now we had a Back to the Future blast of the past. We somehow teleported ourselves back to the rule book there just for these two goals, and then we went right back to normal. It's moronic. I was excited to talk about this because the game's not broken, but this is friggin' stupid.
Okay. I'm not mentioning this because I think he's going to end up in Seattle after they fired Dave Hakstol, but there seems to be this feeling with every coaching opening that Rod Brendamore is coming closer and closer to a massive payday. How do you feel right now about that possibility?
So there was a tweet out there from Kevin Weeks that it was kind of covert, subliminal, whatever. And so I think people are reading into it as Roddy Brindamore. I'm going to say he's talking about Roddy Brindamore. Here's another layer to this game. So Roddy took the job on basically an audition situation. $300K. Anybody wants a job, take it. Roddy took it. And then what do? He proved pretty damn good. 6 years in a row, he's gone to Stanley Cup playoffs. He basically built a juggernaut of an organization in terms of young guys really performing well. So if you're an organization looking at this guy saying, hey, stylistically, and I can say this with like firsthand authority, when I mention the Carolina Hurricanes to every analytics group and team that I present the analytics platform, their eyes roll and their stomach churn because they are utterly awful to play against, the style. They make you retreat. So he is a guy that can fit a system to the player, mold the players to the system, and they just are working harmony, right? You bring in a guy from, they don't even have a minor league system in Carolina. They bring guys in and they assimilate into the system. So here's the ultimate coup d'etat. It didn't really exactly end well with Ron Francis here in Carolina. Not at all. And I'm saying that tongue in cheek because it was ugly.
It was Bill Peters.
What's that?
Bill Peters was his hire.
No, but I know, but how he was unceremoniously a guy who is a Hall of Fame player both here in Carolina and in the National Hockey League. That there's some hurt feelings on sides, or not hurt feelings. There's some, I'll say it, animosity a little bit.
There's animosity from Ron Francis towards the Hurricanes.
Perhaps perhaps.
No, he made a terrible. But he also made a terrible coaching hire there.
I know, but I'm just going to say that there was, you know, how things played out. I don't think everybody loves how it was handled. So I'm going to say, I would not be shocked as I sit here in Apex, North Carolina, talking about this. If somehow, some way, there may be not just the motivation of getting one of the best young coaches in the National Hockey League to come to Seattle, and just like Carolina, Seattle is a very data analytics driven organization. Come there, coach there, familiar staff, and we're pretty well backed. I mean, there's some guy in Montreal that does well for himself as part owner. We can ask him if he's been asked to contribute to a fund for a coach that might rival that amount of money. But I wouldn't be shocked. I would not be shocked if Rod Brind'Amour is a guy that's heavily considered, and maybe some lines have been cast into the water.
Uh-huh. Okay. Because the timing of Hextall's firing was rather strange. Normally you have your exit interviews and you make a decision, or you wait until the season is over, you're before the draft. Or he said he only made up his mind 2 nights ago. So
yeah, but if he made it up, it means he's been thinking about it for a while, and that's my point. I mean, why delay the inevitable? Yeah. Let the job be known. That for me is the signal. The bad signal being put out over Gotham right now is open for business. So. If you're even considering signing a contract, any coach, hey, our job is available. If it's an attractive job, working with us in a great environment in Seattle, new franchise, got the ability to try new things, just keep us in mind. That's all I'm saying is I think it makes complete sense. I'm going the opposite way.
How about $5 million to coach the Leafs?
Oh, that's not enough.
I couldn't imagine Rod, I know, that's what I'm saying. I couldn't imagine the first Yahoo media guy in Toronto asking Roddy one of those, like, bravado questions. Oh.
Aaron, has anyone, just to switch gears here, but for you, has anyone ever been able to shed the title of, like, not being a playoff performer? Like, has anyone ever been, like, you know, held that, been painted with that brush and then been able to shake it?
No.
Yeah, Ovechkin. He got a lot of heat every year. The Capitals didn't win until he finally won. There were a lot of criticism of Ovechkin.
But here's the thing: the cover there is you have to win the Stanley Cup if you're a guy that generally is considered a non-playoff performer. There is a physiological and philosophical change that occurs within hockey players when they get to the playoffs, and it's easily identifiable. In your teammates, as a coach, in your players, are the guys that figure it out during the playoffs and rise to the occasion and morph into what's needed in the moment. That's what I'm going to say. Sometimes you can get cover for your lack of production when the overall team finds success and people just forget. And they don't pin, you know, the tail on the donkey of this guy hasn't won a cup. Well, he's won a cup. Has he been great consistently? No, just that 1 year.
Well, I mean, this is obviously about Marner and what's going on tonight, and you know he scores an unreal goal in basically garbage time in game four the other day. Like the thing that stands out to me is not, it's pretty obvious to everyone that, you know, Mitch Marner's got to bring something more to his game come playoff time to be a guy that can be really counted on by his team come playoff time. But what stood out is some former players, Aaron, like you come on here and you don't come out and you just blast some guy for absolutely no reason and just like taking shots at him and, you know, his character and all these things. Like there are guys who have played in the league, something I've almost never seen before, who have no problem jumping online or, you know, sitting in front of a camera and absolutely blasting this guy for the lack of compete in his game.
So a lot of those guys are in Toronto, have played for Toronto, have a connection to Toronto, and I think they derive their confidence and their opinion from people associated or close that give them information. I don't generally go after players directly because I know, having been one, there's always two sides to a story. I mean, just like, you know, at work, how you perform is based sometimes on the opportunity or the lack of opportunity. So whatever it is, the thing for me about Marner, why I won't go at him at a core, to his core, is I don't believe he's that player. Like, why are we shocked if he's not an overly physical guy in the regular season? You all of a sudden want him to be piss and vinegar and go blow guys up in the corner? No, then who's going to perform the Marner duty? So he's not doing his job well, and so now we're expecting him to do something different. That makes no sense. So guys can take shots, personal shots at the guy, because they may be on the surface looking at it, and the optics say he's not sacrificing himself. No, he's not playing well. That's it. I wouldn't go too deep. He's just not playing very well. Guess what? The overall team isn't playing well, and the organization has handicapped this team again, shortfalling on D, shortfalling in net. You have all your money up front, and once you know that you got a 69-goal scorer on the ice, I'm going to focus on that guy. I'm going to make everybody else on the team pick up the slack. So Matthews gets even more attention when less penalties are called. So this is the, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. I don't know where people are coming up with a different number and deciding that Marner should be something different than he ever has been. He was drafted to be this player.
Do you think it ends tonight, or are the Leafs somehow pull out a mini miracle and force a game six?
I'm working with my buddy Ant Mancini in Montreal on a meme that we have created already that I will debut and launch. But we have to get, apparently this meme service has to get clearance for licensing on. But
okay.
Yeah.
Way to go, Gabby.
I found a perfect one.
All right, Ants Mancini. That's a blast from the past. Carolina taking care of the Islanders tonight?
Yeah, I think it's a donezo. I think that, again, same analogy I used for New York with Washington. Someone in that locker room has to get it across to the collective group that you don't want more games because you risk more injury and you're tired. Stop playing with your food and just finish them.
Winnipeg at home. They've added Cole Perfetti to the lineup, trying to stave off elimination against a high-flying Avalanche team.
Yeah, this is the most disappointing series ever.
Yeah,
I expected this was going to be like a run and gun, get to game seven. It's going to be the loud. There would be a seismic Richter scale level eruption coming out of Winnipeg and it being all white in game seven, and we're going to basically call it quits in game five. I don't see anything happening.
It's going to be an awkward Vezina trophy ceremony at awards night for Connor Hellebuyck if he can't steal at least
one
tonight.
Yeah, Turks and Caicos?
Nashville and Vancouver. Can the Canucks finish it off tonight?
So I'm not going to say it's in the hands of Vancouver. I'm saying this is in the hands of Nashville. I think it's been thrown across the net to Nashville to decide either you're going to dwell on the fact that you're up 3-1, or was it 3-0 or 3-1?
No, it was 3-1.
3-1.
Yeah, 3-1. I would say I was making sure I was getting the magnitude of the deficit there. Can you mentally park that? Right? And I'll give you an example. Game six, we lost 4-0 to Edmonton. When we came back, we had to do a mental cleanse like nothing else. I believe guys like Ryan O'Reilly, like that is like, by all accounts, an incredible leader. I think he's going to get these guys focused and ready and kind of try and shock Vancouver in the first period with the amount of pressure they're going to put on them. Because what still exists in Vancouver, which is still sitting there, is a Demko-less goaltending situation for the Canucks. And that, for me, as the opponent playing Vancouver, gives me a level of interest, belief in the fact that Vancouver is still vulnerable because their goaltending has a clear deficiency there.
Thank you for this. All four games tonight. Enjoy. We'll talk at 5:05 tomorrow. Earlier in the conversation, you referenced the Stanley Cup Final. It was actually 1999, not 2001. Not one of Bob Cole's, not one of Bob Cole's greatest moments, but he's taking us out this afternoon. Thanks, Aaron.
All right, thanks, guys.
Dallas, the first goal. Lehtinen at 8:09 in the first. And Barnes, the tying goal at 8:21 of the second. Third, no scoring. First overtime, nothing. Second overtime, nothing. Nothing here yet. Hall's pass along the line. Hall comes up looking for it, got it back. And Hasek was alive and came out of the net. He knew that was dangerous when he saw the pass hooked over in front of him. Hall dropped it behind the net. Jidnik in on Modano. Modano can't move on it. Now he does. The shot, Hasek down. Rebound, score! Mike Modano with Dennis Hutt, with Brett Hall. And the Stanley Cup has been won on a quick shot. Nadal first, not in. And Hull rammed it home. And the game is over. The cup has been won. The Dallas Stars are the Stanley Cup champions.
I was tired. It was the third overtime.